I'm Clinton White for KNOM Profiles. Join us today for the second segment of a three-part KNOM Profiles focusing on the research being undertaken by scientists involved with the Western Arctic Shelf Basins Interactions Program. 50 scientists participating in the program are currently patrolling the waters of the Bering and Chukchi Seas aboard the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Healy, researching the effects of global climate change in the Arctic. During today's show, we continue with our conversation with SBI scientists Jacqueline Grebmeyer and Lee Cooper, who begin the program by speaking on the technology aboard the Healy and how it benefits their research with the Shelf Basins Interaction Program.
This is the biggest ship in the Coast Guard. It's more than 400 feet long. It's obviously designed to break ice and not have any trouble with that. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful ship in terms of the scientific space that's available to us. Things have really improved over the years, and there's plenty of lab space. I forget how many thousand square 4, feet.
4,000 square feet
of lab space. So it's not quite as tight as some other ships we've been on, where you get, here's your 2 feet, get your stuff done, set up your lab space, so you have a little bit more space to work with, and all of the different wires, all of the different computer capabilities, scanning devices. We can look at the while we're out on these cruises out, and on this one we'll be working largely to the north and northwest of Barrow. We scan the bottom. We're looking using C-beam, all state-of-the-art instrumentation, so we actually come out of this with a very nice map of what the bottom looks like.
What the bottom looks like, what the composition of the sediments, particularly the bathymetry, knowing what the depth you're actually at is very critical, because you're doing measurements, if you're doing the water column measurements or sediment measurements. But you can also see the channels of past rivers, where the Yukon was flowing in when the sea level was 150 meters or 450 feet. You know, this is all land around here, and so the rivers that are flowing now into the bays. So there's multiple labs on this ship. There's a great big lab, which is called the main lab, and then there's a hydrography lab. There's two walk-in areas. We can do low temperature, so we can keep the temperature of these walk-in rooms to be what it is at the bottom of the ocean. So you bundle up when you go in there. So it's -1.5 degrees Celsius, which is what Fahrenheit is.
30 degrees.
30 yeah. degrees. And so we can run real-time experiments there, but it's actually in a room. And another room could be at 1 degree Celsius, so you can run. That's more like what the water column is. And then there's walk-in freezers for storing samples, and that's where the ice cores sometimes are processed in the cold room and then put in there.
Yeah. And I would add that, too, though, if the ship doesn't have what people want, then they bring it. There's actually 4, shipping containers that have been modified into laboratory space, and they were put on the ship in Seattle, and they're specific to individual investigators or were special needs. Like if we're working with radioactive materials, carbon-14, for instance, and people use that to measure how fast the plants are growing in the water, you do these experiments and you have to isolate that from the rest of the ship because, of course, you don't want to have radioactive material just anywhere. And so these people work in a van, and they also have special containers to keep that contained on the ship. And so one of the other things that are being done are what we call incubations, which are people collect the plankton and then see how fast they grow. And the way we see how fast something grows is you add carbon-14 to it, to the water, and the plankton take that up, and the rate at which they take the carbon-14, take it up, gives you an idea how fast things are growing. And this is the best time of year to be up here to see things grow because it's spring, and the Bering and Chukchi Seas are the richest part of the Arctic Ocean, or the richest places you can go in the Arctic in terms of biological productivity. So we see quite a bit, and we're excited to be up here at this time as things are breaking up, because we think we're going to see a lot of interesting biological activity on this cruise at this time.
Because we have seen changes. We have another part of our program that Lee and I have, which is an observatory actually on Diomede Island, that we work with the local folks there and are actually pumping seawater to get real-time measurements 365 days a year. And so we're on the ramping up on that. But as part of that, we have an oceanographic study, and we're seeing over the last 20 years declines in some of the food prey for the marine mammals, in particular diving sea ducks, the eiders, which are on decline. And so in the movement, like, for example, the gray whales are now going further north through Bering Strait and actually feeding in the Chukchi. And we're actually seeing changes and recording and documenting and trying to figure out why is this a man-induced global – is it global change in the sense that it's climate-induced, a change in transport, is it natural cycles? And the only way you do that with long-term time series. So one of the things within the Shelf Basin Program is to try to maintain a time series in Bering Strait, be they moorings. Some of the transects we're doing in our program we would like to have go on after we finish this program so that it actually becomes part of a long-term observatory section. So any ships, be it U.S. or Japan or China or Russia, would do some basic measurements, make that available for the scientific community anywhere to do some analyses on that, because that's the only way you're going to follow this change and to, you know, to try to preempt how making scenarios so people can adjust to what climate is doing.
We're going to have more information soon because people are always asking us, well, what's happening with global change or what can you tell us? And SBI, the Shelf Basin Interactions, as well as all of the other countries that are doing work up here now, are bringing a huge amount of expertise that's never been applied here before. I mean, this cruise itself, to put so many people, a lot of them haven't worked up here before, but we're doing measurements all at the same time of a whole system
that interdisciplinary work
that have never been done on this scale. And at the same time, the Japanese have taken a great interest in the Arctic in terms of global change and global warming. The Chinese are sending their ship up here. The Canadians, the Russians, to the extent that they can, are interested in this issue. And so there's a great deal of focus coming into this part of the Arctic that these ships are sailing through Bering Strait and doing these studies. In fact, the Swedes are coming here next year.
2005.
And the Odin, yeah.
And what's exciting about the project we're doing for the Shelf Basin Interaction is it's a biological change driven by physical forcing. And similar studies are actually being done in Canada now as part of the Canadian Arctic Shelf Exchange Program that's being done over to the east of Mackenzie over by Edmonton Gulf. And then there's another program called Cabanera, which is another ecosystem-type change over in the Barents Sea. And there's so basically this will become part of a puzzle that's pan-Arctic studies. And one of the things people are interested in is this international polar year that's coming up in 2007. So that actually will put a lot of ships from international ones focused in on the Arctic to these type of questions. So this is kind of like a ramping up, but we're starting to see a lot more a turn of the national interest to what's going on with the Arctic.
It's clear that there've been big changes, and you could talk to anybody here in Nome and they would tell you, yeah, the weather's changed or the spring is early or things are warmer or things are different. And it's clear from based on satellite information that the sea ice is retreating. 2002 and 2003 were the greatest ice retreat in the summer that's been observed since we've had satellites up there looking at it, at the issue, so in the past 30 to 35 years. So ice is retreating. That has all kinds of implications for the biological system. For instance, walrus that feed in shallow waters, they are dependent upon having ice that they can rest or congregate on. If that ice isn't there anymore or it retreats so far north that it's only over deep water in the Arctic Ocean, they won't be able to use ice to feed on the bottom. And so, of course, this is something people that live here in Nome are familiar with, but we have a lot of work we do in the lower 48, I think, to educate people as to why it's important to be concerned about global change and the extent of global change that's probably happening in Alaska to the greatest extent and what those costs are in terms of erosion, whether it's at Shishmaref or in Barrow, for that matter, the coastal erosion that as there's less and less sea ice coverage, wave damage, storm damage is going to increase during fall storms. So all of those, the permafrost thawing, all of these things have great impacts, and we need to get a handle on them to decide what to do.
And whether or not it's, what they call, is this a man-induced or is this a natural? Either way, it's happening, and so we have to deal with it. And the idea is better to know the basis of which this is happening so that you can make some planning efforts. And so that's what our modelers are doing, are taking, doing the scenario, what if? We now are starting to know contemporary what happens. And then you say, okay, what happens if you increase the temperature of water by 2 degrees? Then you can then run these models to say, well, this is where the ice would be. And now that we know how fast an animal or plant will grow and how fast a zooplankton will consume it, and because if there's more zooplankton feeding because the water's warming, there's less of the phytoplankton can make it down to the bottom to feed clams, which is what a walrus wants to eat. So there's going to be winners and losers on this. And regardless of who's forcing it or what's forcing it, it's happening. And I think a better educated public and policymaker, the better we are to address these issues.